Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening and welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. Welcome all of you, whether you are listening through your radio as you're in your cars, whether you are watching the live stream on the Hamilton Corner's YouTube channel or on the Facebook page, the live video on the Facebook page, or whether you're listening via podcast. There are thousands, actually hundreds of thousands of people who listen via podcast on a daily basis. Thank you all across the country for tuning into the program. Most of you are making your way from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs. I appreciate you doing that. I know that even on the East Coast, it's 6 p.m. Eastern and 7 p.m. 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern is when the show airs. And I'm learning that we have listeners all over the country, even all over the world. I got messages from various islands and different things. And so it's exciting to see where people tune in. You could be listening to anything else in the world. There are lots of other options available, but I certainly appreciate you tuning in to the Hamilton Corner. And as is my daily encouragement, as you're making that transition from the part-time jobs to your full-time jobs, man, let's show up at our full-time work ready for work. You know, let's give it our all in our homes. Let's, as husbands, let's love our wives as Christ loved the church. As wives, let us love our husbands. You know, let us serve in our families without giving our families just the leftovers from the day. But let's give our families the best. Oh, I see Karen. Karen is still at work. So even if you're still at your part-time job, thank you for tuning in to the Hamilton Corner. There's a lot going on. I'm going to dig into, I mentioned yesterday about the Manafort indictments and the Michael Cohen situation. I'm going to kind of dig into some of the legalities, the differences and things concerning the Michael Cohen plea. But before I do that, and I want to let you guys know that I do this intentionally. I do the scriptural portions before I get to the foolishness of the day, the political issues of the day, the news items of the day, as a reminder to myself as well as to you that we have to put Christ over everything, that we cannot allow ourselves, our minds, and it's very easy to entangle ourselves. That's actually what I'm going to talk about in the scripture, to entangle ourselves in the affairs, the natural affairs of this life, to the neglect of the eternal matters. Notice I didn't say spiritual, because we are spiritual. We are spiritual. We want to make sure the eternal matters are always at the forefront of our minds, and that the eternal matters are brought to bear on the temporal and not the other way around. That we don't allow the temporal matters to squeeze our focus and attention away from eternity, but we allow eternity to inform our temporal engagement. So to that end, we are going to turn to the second epistle to Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 1. And we're going to pick up at the latter part of Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15 is where I'm going to pick up. I'm going to go all the way down to verse 4 in the second chapter of 2 Timothy. Just as a reminder that the original manuscripts, this text would be in Greek, did not include chapter and verse demarcations. That chapter and verse demarcations are the product of the work of editors to make the material more easily navigable, but the original manuscripts did not include these chapter and verse demarcations. Editors tried their best to aid us in the sequential manner and without interrupting the text so much so with the scriptures. But you'll often find me using portions of one chapter bleeding over into the next chapter, because that's actually how the Apostle Paul wrote, for example, this epistle to Timothy, which was a personal letter from him to Timothy. So 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15, we'll go on to chapter 2, verse 4. I'll read it first, then go back and make some comments. Here we go. You, meaning Timothy, are aware that all who are in Asia turned away from me, among whom are Phygellus and Hermogenes. May the Lord grant mercy to the household of Onesiphorus, For he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. But when he arrived in Rome, he searched for me earnestly and found me. May the Lord grant him to find mercy from the Lord on that day. And you well know all the service he rendered at Ephesus. You then, my child, be strengthened by the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses. Entrust to faithful men, who will be able to teach others also. Share in suffering as a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No soldier gets entangled in civilian pursuits, since his aim is to please the one who enlisted him. Now, to help convey this. So first of all, in verse 15, when he says, you are aware that all who are in Asia turned away from me. The biblical reference to the area or province of Asia is modern day Turkey. One of the cities in Asia is Ephesus, which is where Timothy, at the time of this writing, where Timothy was serving and leading one of the churches that Paul had pioneered in Ephesus. Timothy now is leading it because at this point in Paul's life, he is incarcerated in Rome. So when he refers to the fact all who are in Asia turned away from me, among whom are Phygellus and Hermogenes, it's important to note first that these are Greek names. So this is Apostle Paul ministering to Gentiles. These Greek individuals, Phygellus and Hermogenes, are people who upon Paul's arrest and subsequent incarceration, they turned tail and dipped on Paul. They have been walking with him up until the point to where being a follower of the way resulted in Paul's arrest and imprisonment. Kind of like fair weather fellows. Kind of sounds like a lot of people nowadays. They ride with you when things are going good, but as soon as a little bit of difficulty, what's that? That's the tire screeching, peeling off away from you. But then the Apostle Paul contrasts Phygellus and Hermogenes as examples of people who abandoned him in his incarceration, contrast him with Onesiphorus, which is another Greek fellow who maintained faithfulness to serving the Lord Jesus and maintained his relationship with Apostle Paul even after Paul's arrest and incarceration. Which should be a reminder, though there may be some who are unable to stand the test of the difficulty, the Lord will have a remnant. Not everybody will leave in difficult times. And Paul explains how Onesiphorus was a great blessing to him. Now, in light of all of this, I read the verses in chapter 4 because Paul is really discussing and detailing some of the complexities and the difficulties of being a Christ follower, knowing, if you remember at the end of the book of Acts, when the Lord sent a prophetic warning to Paul. It said, listen, if you go to Rome, man, you're going to be in chains. Remember, Agabus even demonstrated you're going to be handcuffed, so to speak, tied up and incarcerated. And the Apostle Paul said, man, listen, I'm not only willing to be in chains for the Lord, I'm willing to go all the way and die for him. So Paul, knowing full well what was to become of him after going to Rome, he still goes nevertheless. Can that be said about us? If we know following the Lord will result in difficulty, we'll still say, yes, I'll go because the Lord has called. I don't know. And this touch me, tease me, ooh, please me kind of understanding of Christianity. I don't know. I have my thoughts though. But the Apostle Paul goes anyway. So in light of going to Rome, being incarcerated, seeing several of those who were disciples of his, abandoned him in the incarceration, and a few remained faithful, Paul then says to Timothy, you then, my child, you, Timothy, who are following in my footsteps, me having sowed seed, plowed ground, and established established the church through me in Ephesus, you, Timothy, in light of my example, you be strengthened by the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses. You've heard me proclaim the gospel in the presence of many witnesses. So you, knowing what is to be taught and preached, you continue to entrust that into the responsibility of faithful men who are able to teach others. And basically what Paul is saying, that you know what's really supposed to be happening here. Don't allow my incarceration and my impending death, because Paul knew it was this was a wrap. This is toward the end of his life. Don't allow this to dissuade you away from keeping your eyes focused on the prize. Continue the process of preaching the gospel. Continue the process of making disciples. And as you make disciples, highlight those who are apt to continue on the discipleship formation process. Don't let the difficulty that you see surrounding me naturally to overwhelm what you know eternally. Man, is that not a message for us today? And then Paul puts an exclamation point on this communication by saying, share in suffering as a good soldier of Christ. As a good soldier of Christ Jesus, no soldier gets entangled in civilian pursuits since his aim is to please the one who enlisted him. The Apostle Paul is saying, don't allow these temporal issues to dissuade you away from the eternal focus that you know you should have. There have been many people who have wrongly used this scripture to explain, well, Christians shouldn't be involved in this, and Christians shouldn't be involved in politics because we can't be entangled in civilian affairs. That is not what Apostle Paul is saying. What Apostle Paul is saying is that we do not allow civilian affairs to overwhelm our focus, to consume our focus to the place where we get distracted as if there is no such thing as eternity hanging in the balance. The Apostle Paul is saying through this particular verse, he's encouraging Timothy to keep his focus on the main thing. That's why you hear me repeatedly on this program say, yes, I engage in politics and civic engagement, not because I'm a political animal, because I know the threats that are posed to the proclamation of the gospel and the discipleship formation process through public policy. But don't get it twisted. I am not in love with politics. That's why we talk about the scriptures first. And my encouragement to you and my challenge to you, as difficult as it may be, do not allow these temporal matters to squeeze your focus away from the resurrected Christ and his commission and his enlisting. I like how Paul says that. You have been enlisted into the Lord's army. Don't allow temporal matters to squeeze your attention away from your enlistment. Because having been enlisted by one who gave himself as a ransom for me and for you, he is the one with whom we have to do. Let us live our lives in light of the fact that the day is coming when we will stand before him and give an account for what we did with the time he granted us on this side of eternity, where the quality of our Christian walk will be weighed in the balance, and whether our works be wood, hay, stubble, or precious stones, we will be evaluated. Let us keep that focus and allow that focus to militate toward our engagement on all of these other affairs. It enables us, brothers and sisters, to have great clarity in what we do. It enables us to ensure that our loyalties remain vertical. That's why it's easy for me to say, listen, I happen to have conservative views politically because I'm a Christian. I remember the first time somebody told me, man, you're just a conservative. I didn't know what they were talking about. And I said to them, well, you can call it what you want, but I'm following the word of God. Which makes it easy for me to be an equal opportunity truth teller, because my allegiance is heaven bound, is heavenward, and not horizontal. Now, again, don't get me wrong. That is not an excuse to back. And if you listen to the show, you know, I tell it like it is. But I do that from the perspective of my eternal commitment, which is why I do it with such passion and such zeal and such vigor. So the encouragement again is to not allow temporal matters to manipulate us or to squeeze our focus away from our eternal focus. All too often, when life hits us hard, one of the first things that goes by the wayside is what? Our prayer life. Well, if we're eternally focused, you realize, man, we have so many things we need to do that we can't afford to be feeble in prayer. I can't afford to come on this radio without having spent time on my face before our King. It's too important, because if you haven't noticed yet, time is winding down. The Lord's return is imminent.
Thomas Jefferson's sacrifice. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. Thomas Jefferson was a powerful advocate for the freedom of the United States. In the late 1700s, he authored the Declaration of Independence, was the governor of Virginia, and then the third president of the United States. Yet he suffered because of his strong support for American freedom. The King of Britain issued a warrant for Jefferson's arrest, and the British Army leadership personally hunted Jefferson and his family. In the path of a powerful army, Jefferson was able to warn his family and get out just minutes before the British Army arrived. Running for their lives, they retreated to their Poplar Forest farm, where they hid during the summer. Then Jefferson returned to Monticello, where he continued his fight for freedom. His character, leadership, and sacrifice helped build America. Learn more about our founders and their personal sacrifices. Visit Liberty Counsel's online store for more information. Learn more how you can be involved, lc.org.
Nothing can get done in the United States Senate for good unless we end the legislative filibuster. We're urging you today to call your senator and ask them to end the legislative filibuster so that we can defund Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion provider in America. Call the Capitol Switchboard at 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121, or go to afaaction.net.
Franklin Graham.
Since the war, Vietnam has been close to the gospel in many ways.
The new Billy Graham TV special tells the story of Franklin Graham's historic outreach in Hanoi.
If there's anything I can do to proclaim Christ in this land, I want to do it.
And Vietnam veterans share how Jesus heals the pain of their past.
I was this monster, and all of a sudden God touched my life.
You can watch Vietnam Rising Hope at BillyGraham.tv. That's BillyGraham.tv.
Politico accidentally told the truth about homosexuality for a few hours on Sunday before the voices of rabid anti-God intolerance forced a retraction. In a profile of former Trump lawyer Ray Cohn, senior editor Michael Cruz correctly said that Cohn died of AIDS, which was, quote, the result of the decadent homosexual lifestyle, end quote. The offending phrase was pulled after homosexual activists landed on Politico like a falling safe. But homosexuality is decadent. It puts the human body to uses for which it was not designed, as anyone who has studied basic plumbing knows. Because it is so unnatural, it is a unique threat to human health. For example, 82% of all the new cases of HIV/AIDS in 2015 were found in men who have sex with other men. Politico would have been better off to leave the phrase alone.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm going to take some time and deal with this Michael Cohen guilty plea. And I'm not going to spend as much time with Paul Manafort because, as I stated yesterday, he was convicted on 8 of the 18 counts in the indictment with which he was charged in the Virginia trial. And there is another trial that awaits Paul Manafort in Washington, D.C. The reason why I'm not spending as much time on that is there are several reasons. First and foremost is because all of the charges that Manafort was brought to trial on and ultimately was convicted on, they have nothing to do with President Trump. These all come from shady business dealings that occurred years before Trump ever even announced his candidacy for the presidency. And like I said from the very beginning, it's unfortunate for him that the prosecution came as a result of his connection to the Trump campaign, because the Mueller team was so focused on trying to get President Trump. It's unfortunate for him, but if he did the crime, then he should be held accountable. So for those reasons, I'm not going to spend as much time there, because again, If he did the crime, he should be held accountable. And I understand that there is clearly a difference in how the prosecutorial vigor displayed in getting people close to Trump versus people close to the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton. I get that. I understand that. But, you know, I have very little sympathy, frankly, for somebody who had been getting away with committing high levels of financial, you know, financial crimes. And that's just where I am on it. You know, I do think it's pretty egregious that you see this clear lack of let me say it this way, of balanced scales of justice. But you know, if Manafort did the crime, then he is to be held accountable for it. Now, with Michael Cohen, this is a bit different because the guilty plea of Michael Cohen, which I find very interesting, a guilty plea preceded even an indictment. If you notice, because obviously it would have been big news that Cohen was indicted for anything. So you have this guilty plea entered prior to there even being an indictment, which should tell you something. So I'm going to go through a little bit of that. But this is the first indictment, if you will, or I'm sorry, not indictment. This is the first criminal activity that has got remotely close to Trump. But I'm going to try to unpack some of this through this. So Michael Cohen yesterday pled guilty to 5 counts of tax evasion. That's important to note. 5 counts of tax evasion, 1 count of making false statements to a financial institution, 1 count of willfully causing an unlawful corporate contribution, and 1 count of making an excessive campaign contribution. Now, I wanted to make sure I shared what the specific counts were so that you would be aware of where the bulk of the pressure was applied to Michael Cohen. The bulk of the pressure applied to Michael Cohen was on his tax evasion crime. 5 of the criminal charges against Michael Cohen were for tax evasion. The tax evasion counts alone had Cohen facing as much as 60 years in prison. Okay, now I'm sharing this so you can kind of be aware of the way that plea bargains work. What more than likely happened, of course, I wasn't there, so I can't say with as a matter of fact what happened. But what more than likely happened is that as Bob Mueller did a handoff of the criminal case against Michael Cohen to the U.S. Attorney for the State of New York, because in my estimation, he knows that his prosecutorial authority does not extend to crimes that do not impinge upon the 2016 election, Russia into collusion, so on and so forth. As a result of the handoff, the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York leaned on Michael Cohen saying that if you want to get a whiff of a deal on these tax evasion counts, then you're going to have to give us something that we can use against Trump. That is what I think happened. Because the tax evasion is where the bulk of Michael Cohen's criminal culpability and his exposure rested. Now, having said that, we now have to go into an analysis of whether or not President Trump can be held criminally responsible for anything in relationship to Michael Cohen's guilty plea. And I will tell you, just in a categorical statement, that nothing about Michael Cohen's guilty plea at this point implicates President Trump as being a criminal co-conspirator or anything of that nature. And I'll tell you why. So the portion that many of the mainstream media is seizing on is Michael Cohen's allocution, which is the statements he makes in support of his offering a guilty plea, is when he said that he made payments to Stormy Daniels to basically pay hush money to her, and it was directed or coordinated by Donald Trump. The way that the thing unfolded as it's being reported is that there was a tabloid company that actually paid Stormy Daniels. They shelved her story. I'm saying that incorrectly. That Michael Cohen facilitated the payment some kind of way, and then was later reimbursed. Now, the issues that are pertinent in this particular scenario is, first of all, the main cog of this case, this guilty plea against Michael Cohen, and an effort to wrap that into a prosecution of Donald Trump. The main cog is whether or not a potential jury will find Michael Cohen to be credible. Do you believe him? Do you believe what he's saying? I mean, this is a guy that has a clear incentive to kind of get something to happen to get him out of that 60 years on the tax evasion side. Which is why in the court of law, if there's an implication about of someone else with criminal culpability, or that there's an allegation of criminal culpability, that you need more than their testimony alone to sustain a conviction. If you have a case where you have co-defendants, two people, say, for example, drug dealers who are drug dealing together, and one flips on the other, I couldn't just put the one drug dealer on the stand and have a jury convict the drug dealer that I'm charging based on the testimony of the other drug dealer. There has to be some additional corroborating evidence to sustain a conviction in that regard. So the first question is, will the jury find Michael Cohen to be credible? That's the first hurdle that I think would pose a significant hurdle in any type of criminal prosecution if there were to develop in the future. Secondly, and this is the more important, I won't say more important, but I would at a minimum say extremely significant concept within this whole scenario. Is it a crime for President Trump to have coordinated and directed Michael Cohen to pay these women? Now, this leaving aside the whole thing of adultery, I'm going to say some things about that at the end as I finish this legal analysis of the potential criminal charges. Well, first and foremost, let me say campaign finance violations. I mean, that is the argument. I forgot to say that. The argument is that President Trump directing or coordinating the payment of these women to conceal their testimony, to make them shut up about whatever allegations of extramarital affairs, that is an in-kind campaign contribution. That is the argument. That is the argument, which I think is a very tenuous argument at best, and I'll tell you why. But before I get to tell you why, the first thing I want to say is that campaign finance violations are usually civil violations that result in fines, and they are so routine, and this is not to justify it, but they're so routine that many legal minds have described it as traffic tickets. I mean, not traffic tickets, as jaywalking. And how many people get dinged for jaywalking? And just to put context to this, President Obama's campaign in 2008 had to pay a $375,000 fine for campaign finance violations, which was one of the largest campaign finance violation fines in the history of our political system. To additionally add context, when Bob Dole failed to win the presidency in 1996, he paid what was then one of the largest campaign finance violation fines of $100,000. In 1996, he paid it 2 years later. One of the main sources of former President Obama's campaign finance violations was that he failed to report donations of $1,000 or more within the 20-day window that was made available for him to do so. So they paid the fine after the fact, which is very routine. Doesn't make it right, but it is very routine. I'm explaining this to show the extremely rare nature of having a criminal charge lobbied for a failure for a campaign finance violation. All right? Now, having said all of that, because campaign finance violations are usually civil in nature, what has to happen to make them move over into the criminal realm? And I'll read you the standard from 52 U.S. Code, United States Code, Section 30109D. That section says, knowing and willful violations of campaign finance laws that involve contributions of more than $25,000 in a calendar year are felonies punishable by up to 5 years in prison. So, having said that, if the alleged payments were $24,999, we wouldn't even be having a conversation about this because it wouldn't be in the felonious criminal jurisdiction. All right? All of this is important to note the type of charges that we're talking about. Now, the key in this particular statute is the terminology knowing and willful violations. All right? In order for President Trump to be held criminally responsible, he has to have a combination of knowing that the payments were made and they were specifically made and exclusively made they were specifically made in knowing violation of the campaign finance laws, and they were exclusively made to benefit the candidate politically. Okay, that makes sense? Let me explain what I'm talking about. So the relevant test in analyzing this knowing and willful component of this statute is the irrespective test, all right? And the FEC explains it this way, basically. The question is, would the payments have been made irrespective of the political campaign? The specific FCC provision says it this way. If the expense would exist even in the absence of the candidacy, or even if the office holder were not in office, then the personal use ban applies, which means that the expenditure would be banned from being considered a campaign expenditure. So this is where you get the reality. When you get beyond all of the talking heads and the people that are just passionately want to get Trump, in order for President Trump to be brought into the realm of criminality for this, evidence has to be put on to show that the payments were made, first of all, with President Trump's full knowledge that this is a violation of campaign finance law, that he willfully pursued the coordination or direction of these payments with the sole purpose of benefiting himself politically. I'm just going to tell you, that's going to be hard to prove. Why? Well, I don't know. President Trump has this thing called a hotel business where his name is on every building that he ever built across the entire world. So if these payments are made, and an argument can be made that they're made to keep his business running, or they're made to make sure things are not too rocky with his wife and his children, and he has any number of reasons to explain them. Now, this is where it gets a bit murky for President Trump. And I have other things. Can he be prosecuted for it? I'm just going to tell you, the likelihood of him being indicted for this is minimal. I said from the very beginning, when they raided Michael Cohen's office, that was a hat tip to me to know that their objective here is not for anything criminal with President Trump. They want to try to get as much muck and dirt as they can to use it politically. That's what this is for. They're going to try to muddy him up as much as possible to try to get Democrats to win the House in these midterms, and then to try to win the Senate and the presidency in 2020 to turn them all Democrat. That is the objective, because the likelihood of a criminal indictment for President Trump in light of this information is just minimal. I'm just telling you the legal reality here. And I have some audio I'm going to play from some other people that are saying things that are very similar to what I'm telling you right now. The question of whether or not this is an impeachable offense, well, that turns on politics. High crimes and misdemeanors are the standard for this. It's determined by the House. I'm going to tell you that I don't even believe the Democrats really want to impeach President Trump, because they don't want to have to utter the words President Mike Pence. They don't want Mike Pence more than they don't want Trump. The best thing they have going for them politically is President Trump in office, because the only a part of their agenda that they're advancing is the oust Trump movement. That is providing momentum for them to get people to the ballot box. So that is what they want. They don't want to have a President Pence, because if Pence is in the presidency, you've just put him in position as a potential incumbent, and you just rallied the people that were a part of Trump's base to say, hey, let's support President Trump's vice president in a re-election bid in 2020. They don't want that. They don't want that. Now, I've heard some people say, and this is where, you know, we have to just cut it right down the middle here. I've heard some people say, well, you know, we wouldn't have any of these problems if Jeff Sessions would do what he was supposed to do as the attorney general. And I said, whoa, 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 stop the brakes a little bit. I understand, and I have complained about Jeff Sessions' performance on this Russia investigation front. But let's be clear, Cat Daddy, we wouldn't be having these conversations if we wouldn't have had these allegations of President Trump's adultery. That's really the core of this, if we're going to be honest about it. Now, having said all of that, one of the places that puts President Trump in a precarious position is that to date, he has denied the extramarital affair, which, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't know very many people that would be a part of $100,000 payments to cover up stuff they haven't done. Now, there is an argument on the other side. Well, you know, it's just easier to pay the money up front and to try to make it go away than to try to fight this in public. But you be the judge of that. But the American people voted for President Trump knowing full well he had a history of, you know, philandering. So saying all of that, you're going to have a lot of people that want to tell you that this is a smoking gun, that President Trump is automatically going down for this. And I just have to tell you, folks, that that's not the case. It's not the case. The one incident where there were charges in 2012 when John Edwards was paying his mistress, had his mistress being paid millions of dollars by his supporters, he wasn't even convicted, because he was able to successfully argue that these payments were personal. So that is what's going on in the legal world.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered, and now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 855-PSALM-23 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. It's not polite to call somebody a sleazeball, but if it were polite, Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort would fit the bill. Cohen, the president's former attorney, and Manafort, his former campaign manager, now facing prison time. No doubt the optics in recent days look mighty bad for the president, but there's still no evidence he's done anything wrong, nor is there evidence that he told anyone else to do anything wrong. And it bears repeating that Cohen's guilty plea and Manafort's guilty verdict had nothing to do with Russia collusion, nothing at all. So what is this really all about? Well, I contend this is nothing short of an attempt to take down the Trump presidency. And think about this for a moment. Could it be possible that had President Trump not won the election, that Mr. Cohen and Mr. Manafort would have never been charged? If that's true, well, the president just might have a point that this is, in fact, nothing short of a witch hunt. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. We will open the phone lines this segment if you want to call and talk about. We're basically just talking about the Cohen guilty plea that happened yesterday. You're welcome to join the program. The number to call is 888-589-8840. The number again is 888-589-8840. I'm going to play some audio for you where Mark Levin, who is a legal scholar I respect, is basically saying the same thing I'm saying. That, you know, much of the focus on this Cohen plea is really still not much of an indication or an indictment of any criminal activity on the part of President Trump. So listen to what Mark Levin had to say. It's clip number three, please.
Just because a prosecutor says that somebody violated a campaign law doesn't make it so. He's not the judge. He's not the jury. We didn't adjudicate anything. It never went to court. That's number two. A campaign expenditure under our federal campaign laws is an expenditure solely for campaign activity. A candidate who spends his own money or even corporate money for an event that occurred not as a result of the campaign, it is not a campaign expenditure. More, let's say this candidate settles a lawsuit that was initiated before he becomes a candidate, and he says to his personal lawyer, I want you to pay, settle that lawsuit, you can use my corporate funds, my private funds, whatever it is. That is perfectly legal, too, the prosecutor would say. But that influenced the election. So what? There are certain things you do that influence an election that are legal, certain things you do that influence an election that are illegal. Nothing here was spent out of the campaign. Nothing was done with the campaign or to the campaign. This is exactly what the federal law is. Donald Trump's in the clear. Let's say Donald Trump even directed Michael Cohen to make payments in non-disclosure agreements. So what? He's allowed to do that.
And folks, that's what I'm saying. In order to sustain any type of criminal culpability on the part of Donald Trump, they, meaning the prosecution, is going to have to be able to show that President Trump directed or instructed or coordinated whatever he did exclusively. That's the key. Exclusively for the purposes of influencing the campaign. And I'm just going to tell you, legally, they're going to have a hard time proving that. They would have a very hard time proving that. I'm going to tell you right now, my prediction is that you will never see an indictment of President Trump for this. You won't see it. You won't see it. You won't see an indictment. Now, impeachment is a whole nother ballgame. It's only been used twice, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. And both impeachments were in the House, and the Senate refused to convict. And you have Richard Nixon, who was going to be impeached, but he resigned prior to impeachment. In that instance, you had Democrat majorities in the House and in the Senate at the same time. And so he was going to be impeached, but he resigned before that happened. And so having said all of that, it's just, legally speaking, I'm talking strictly legally speaking, based on the law, the way it's defined and the way it has been applied, that it's extremely unlikely that Donald Trump will be indicted for that. Now, if there's something else, do they have anything else? And I'll add this into the pot as well. And this is just a little inside pool as a result of being a former prosecutor. It's my opinion that if they had something more solid on Donald Trump in terms of criminal culpability, Michael Cohen would not just have a guilty plea, he would have immunity. Because Michael Cohen would be an absolutely material witness, an indispensable witness to taking down the President of the United States. It would not just be a guilty plea, he would have immunity. But he does not have immunity. He has exposure up to 5 years in prison for his crimes. Now, I grant you that is a steep, significant drop from up to 60 years down to 5 years. But if he had the smoking gun against Donald Trump, he would have immunity. That's just my opinion, which could be wrong, but I don't think it is. Could be wrong. I don't think it is. I want to play another piece of audio for you as the calls are lining up. And this was Lanny Davis. this is crazy. Lanny Davis on Megyn Kelly's show this morning on NBC, where he is, well, I'll just let you listen to it for yourself. Play clip number two, please.
There is no dispute that Donald Trump committed a crime. No dispute, because his own lawyers said to the special counsel in a letter that he directed, that's the word they used.
That's not true, Lanny. Mm-hmm.
Michael Cohen to do these payments. He didn't want to do them because he was covering up his involvement in the payoff and the hush money. He and his family are suffering. He is asking for help. We've set up a website, michaelcohentruthfund.com, to help him tell the truth about Donald Trump. We need help.
Michael Cohen has suffered a tragic and difficult experience with his family. He's without resources, and we've set up a website called michaelcohentruth.com that we're hoping that he will get some help from the American people so he can continue to tell the truth.
The audience is, they don't know if you're ready to donate, Lanny, but we did check before we went to air. It's got $70,000 in it so far. And listen, we appreciate you coming on.
I would say the reaction of your audience may be that they're not as interested in getting the truth out about Donald Trump as many other people in the country. Approximately 60% of the country would not have the reaction of your audience.
Okay. By the way, I overstated it. It's 20,000. It's not 70,000.
$20,000, Lanny Davis. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think it's the best route to go to insult the people you're begging for money from. So Michael Cohen can quote-unquote tell the truth. I have several questions. First and foremost, why does he need to get paid money to tell the truth, old Lanny? Last thing I thought I knew that telling the truth was free. And he's already entered the guilty plea with the federal, with the prosecutors. So why does it cost money? Oh, I'll tell you why. Because Lanny Davis is trying to get money for his own fees. For his own fees. And then to my first question about Michael Cohen, how confident are you in Cohen's truth telling if he has his lawyer on television basically saying, if you want me to tell the truth, pay me? Doesn't sound like an upstanding fellow that's just committed to the truth coming out. And you heard the people booing. I'm sorry. That studio audience is in New York. If you can't get a New York studio audience to support your fundraising efforts to torpedo Donald Trump, I don't think that dog is going to hunt in the rest of the country. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But to the phone lines we go. We will start today's conversation with the callers in the state of Washington, where Jason is on the line. Jason, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Actually, I'm in D.C., but I'm actually involved in politics under an NDA. And if I break it, I'm subject to litigation to rectify that situation. So I don't know why the Trump team hasn't already began to pursue, you know, filing a lawsuit against Stormy Daniels and her lawyer for violating the NDA, because it's not illegal for anyone to enter an NDA and pay for it. I mean, Mark Levin said it, but it's the truth. Anyone can enter an NDA.
Happens every day, all day, every day.
Yeah, every day. Oh, yeah, every day. And, you know, it's the crazy thing is that Michael Cohen's lawyers admitted to a crime that wasn't a crime.
That's exactly right.
So that's suspect, because, I mean, if he signed an NDA and paid it, or just paid the NDA, he didn't commit a crime. So his legal staff, including Lanny Davis, are just nuts.
Yep, you're right. You're spot on, Jason. You're absolutely right, which bold contributes to the reality that there's a lot of brouhaha, but it's not much there still. You know, after nearly 2 years, this is where we are. And I think this is part of the reason why they wanted so desperately to have President Trump sit down with them, is because they would be able to flesh out more of a perjury trap than any substantive violations about the 2016 election. And oh, by the way, what happened to the allegations about collusion with the Russians? When's the last time we talked about that? Folks, I'm telling you. When President Trump describes this as a witch hunt, because that is exactly what it is. It is a witch hunt. Go now to the great state of Texas, where O'Neill is on the line. O'Neill, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program. O'Neill?
O'Neill?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
You?
Yes.
Hey, oh no, I actually said Julio, but that's okay. My brother from another mother.
Hey, doing, what's friend? Up, Julio?
Hey, nothing, man, nothing. Hey, I've got, I totally forgot what I was about to say, man. I'm getting so nervous right now, but it's cool. I won't take up any of your time. I just like to say praise God for, I don't know if you saw on the news, this little three-year-old got his one-year-old brother out of a car where his mother had flipped. The mother was ejected and unfortunately passed away. And, man, I'd just like to say, you know, thanks for everything you do, eh?
All right. Thank you, Julio. No, I hadn't heard that yet. Thank you for your call and your comments. We'll move it right along. Go next to Louisiana, where Lucas is on the line. Lucas, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir, Mr. Hamilton.
Yes,
nice
sir.
Nice to speak to you. I need a lawyer to kind of explain something to me. Would any of this happen from Stormy Daniels if he, at the time, candidate Trump, was running for president? Would there have been any, you know, reason for her to do this? Was it only because he was running for president?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And if that was the case, when do we ever talk extortion?
That's a great question. That's a great
question. About, you know, defamation of character.
That's a great question, Lucas. That's a great question. I think any rational human being can know that Stormy Daniels came out of the woodworks when she saw President Trump had the possibility of becoming the president of the United States, you know? Frankly, that's when things like this happen all the time, not just with political candidates, but with athletes and other things. And again, this is the thing, and I heard this with my own 2 ears, when Dr. Ben Carson was running for president. Prior to him running for president, when he was elevated to the head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins, I was in Missouri myself speaking, and he was speaking at the same place. And he said there were allegations made against him, about him having fathered a child outside of his marriage. And Ben Carson said, oh, that's an absolute lie. And I'm not paying them a dime, because he said, I have never had sex with any woman in the world other than my wife. So no, I'm not paying any money. No, I'm not doing anything. I will take any paternity test from here to Zamunda. So this is part of the problem is President Trump's history. Frankly, that's what it is. So I think we would be disingenuous to ignore that part of the conversation and to solely put all of the onus on, this is just, you know, Stormy Daniels or just Jeff Sessions' fault or just the media's fault. Like my dad told me when I was a little boy, son, if somebody accuses you of something, you better make sure they're lying. That's what my dad told me growing up. If somebody accuses you of something, you better make sure they're lying. Now, again, I don't know what all happened. President Trump to date has denied this. But that is where we are. So thank you for your call and your comments. We'll stay in Louisiana where Leisha is on the phone. If I mispronounce your name, please correct me.
No, that's right, Leisha.
All right. Hey, Leisha. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for keeping me laughing but informed on my way home. I appreciate that. My question is if Mr. Cohen had been recording conversations between himself and his client, Donald Trump, where's the audio tape of President Trump directing him to pay these women off?
Great question. Great question, Leisha. Very, very good question. And I guess that remains to be seen. Among the sources of evidence that federal prosecutors in New York are asserting that they would offer had this case with Michael Cohen have gone to trial, it would have included some recordings, but there were no specific references to recordings that indicate President Trump had directed this. And again, if this is the case, if you can charge President Trump directly, why isn't he charged? Why isn't he charged? So that is a great question, and it's one that I think needs to be considered. We'll go next to Arkansas, where Sharon is on the line. Sharon, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Abe. Love your show. I just have a question. How would Congress have a leg to stand on with impeachment charges for these payments and signing the NDAs? Mm-hmm. Don't they have a trust that does exactly that for congressmen that are...
I need the hypocrite bell right now. You're absolutely right, Sharon. You are absolutely right. How can Congress have a leg to stand on in this regard when they have a hush fund that they passed legislation for to protect Congress members who sexually harass people in the workplace, specifically women, and to pay them off? How would they have a leg to stand on? That is a great question to ask, and it is my contention that they would not have a leg to stand on. And if I were President Trump's administration, if Congress did want to try to do something like that, I would tell them I want a list of the names of every single person who has ever had money paid out from this fund. And I bet you'll see some roaches scurry back under the covers and back into the covers very quickly. I bet you would. You're absolutely right about that. You know, it's just unfortunate. In addition to all of this, the standard for impeachment of high crimes and misdemeanors, it usually applies to conduct once a person is in their elective office. You are now considering a person, the desire to impeach a president based on conduct before they ever enter the Oval Office. And many of the people that are screaming for President Trump to be impeached are the same people that said Bill Clinton, boys will be boys. I'm not right about this, folks.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.